It's a trap!
Hello and welcome to episode number 169 of Radio TCX, your weekly source for X-Wing news and strategy. I'm Tim Dugan.
And I'm John McDermott.
And we're both pretty excited for the upcoming points update that should be dropping on June 25th. Fantasy Flight's going to announce their points update via their live stream that Tuesday. So we're going to hopefully get a bunch of changes we're going to see. Definitely going to shake up the metagame for the foreseeable future. Both John and I have a fair bit of speculation about what's going to change in the future, but rather than dedicating a whole episode to talking about changes that might be, we thought it would be better to focus on something that's a little bit more practical and that you could not only apply to this points update, but future points updates.
So today we're looking at talking about ship value and opportunity when it comes to the game of X-Wing. And what that means is kind of thinking about what is the value of a ship compared to what it costs in points?
Yeah, so we're going to dive into that. That way you can use this knowledge and then figure out how to see if a ship's a good value based on all the different factors that actually make, you know, ships good to fly in X-Wing. All right, so I think to start this off, we should probably talk a little bit about value and what we mean when we say value, because X-Wing's got a pretty basic setup here. Each pilot for each ship costs a certain amount of points. Each upgrade card costs a certain amount of points. Maybe it scales, maybe it doesn't. But those points don't directly correlate to anything in particular that makes a ship good or bad, because we'll see a lot of pilots in the same ship chassis that have different point values. And in a metagame, we'll see certain pilots of certain ships show up way more than many of the other pilots in that same ship.
So when we're talking about value here, we're talking about value kind of as the effectiveness of a ship compared to how much you invest in it to put it in your list.
And this is kind of a difficult thing to measure. So a lot of it's really abstract because, okay, we're talking about point values and we're talking about value. If you're not using points as like a baseline for a certain threshold of value, how do you determine what value is? And the way I look at it is you have to compare a ship. Like if I think a ship is a good value for the points you invest it, that means I'm comparing it to other ships in the same chassis. I'm comparing it to other ships at similar point costs, and I'm comparing it to other ships in the same role. So certain ships will always rise to the top, and certain pilots in those ships will always rise to the top. There's a reason where I feel like right now, if you're going to see a T-65 X-Wing, it's probably Wedge. And then if there's a different T-65 X-Wing you're looking at, Wedge is also probably in that list too.
Right, and part of that value is just asking yourself why the other ships on that same chassis aren't being used. Is it because of their pilot ability? Is it cost? What is it that makes that ship not worth the value of another pilot of the same chassis?
So today we're going to look at some factors that contribute to making a ship a good value, because you'll see a lot of the ships that we would identify as being a good value are a good value for different reasons. And value can change over time. So that's one of the reasons we're talking about this today. That is the reason we're talking about this today, is because whenever these point updates change, I would expect a lot of the ships that we mention are going to fluctuate in points to some degree. Maybe they'll still be a pretty good value. Maybe they'll just drop out of the game completely, you know, functionally from competitive play. It's interesting to look at the factors that we're going to talk about. So you can look at when the new points update drops, okay, what ships should I be flying?
And one of the unique things they've done now in second edition too, along with the point increases and other things that can fluctuate, is they didn't print the upgrade bars on the ships anymore. So they can actually change the upgrade slots that ships have available to them. They can add them, they can remove them. They have those options available to them as well.
A good example of this is Whisper, where it wasn't a huge point change that changed the value of the ship. It was the fact that they switched out a slot. So they dropped the crew slot in favor of a gunner slot, so you could no longer run Darth Vader crew on the ship, and you had to run something else instead. That dramatically affected the ship's value. So you can see changes beyond points that can actually affect the value of a ship. But let's start by looking at some examples of good value. So one of the ships that I think is probably one of the best values in the game right now, we've talked about him a lot on this podcast, is Lulo Lampar in the Resistance RZ-2 A-Wing.
And one of the things that makes Lulo such a good value is that he can hit more like an expensive ship. For me, when I think of an ace, I think of a ship that typically has access to 3 red dice. It's just a more consistent offensive output, and Lulo's ability allows him to have that extra die when he shoots.
And you can really see the increase in value with Lulo when you compare it to other pilots in the RZ2A, because you even have another pilot at the same initiative as Lulo, and, you know, a couple points cheaper, Taliesin Lintra. But the fact that Lulo's pilot ability has such a dramatic effect on the damage output, I think elevates Lulo so far above Tally that you would never, you know, try to save the 3 points to take Tally instead of Lulo. Pretty much every time I've seen Taliesin is always in addition to Lulo. So Lulo's that, like, first decision you make along the way if you're going to run this type of ship. And so this is a case where the value comes from a ship behaving like a ship that you would expect to be more expensive. So Lulo can hit like an ace, but that does come at some cost. So typically, like you said, John, a real ace has, you know, 3 attack dice or a way to consistently put out higher amounts of damage. Well, Lulo's ability where while you're stressed, you roll 1 more attack die and roll 1 fewer defense die means that if you set up the positioning right, Lulo's hitting like a 3 attack dice ship for only about 38 points, whereas if you wanted a ship that normally hits with that many attack dice and can get the good mods that Lulo can, you'd have to go and pay more points for that.
Yeah, and think, for example, like Darth Vader. So at base, he's 65 points, and to get those 3 dice, he needs to have a target lock. So Lulo is just a little over half the cost, and you're basically getting the same effect for the exchange of a stress token.
Now, obviously, comparisons that we make, there will always be like, well, oh, Darth Vader has 3 force, which is a huge thing. Darth Vader has the ability to get a lot of different actions in a given turn. That's true, but when we're looking at a ship that's like Lulo and is good value for the points you're paying, we're accepting that there are certain detriments to it. When Lulo's stressed, only has 2 agility. Compare that with 4 hit points. If you get in the wrong position, Lulo's just going to disappear. You have to take these factors into account when you're saying you're getting the value. So sometimes the value's not direct. It's not just like we're getting, you know, a full-sized ace ship for cheaper points. You're getting most of the effectiveness of a full ace, but the pressure's on you to use that effectively and not fall in situations where that value disappears really quickly.
It requires a little bit more setup to get that true value out of him.
And we see similar abilities like this for ships that function like they're more expensive in a lot of the different factions here. I think Gideon Hask is a good example in the TIE Fighter. Gideon Hask's pilot ability, while you're attacking a damaged ship, you get to roll 1 extra attack die. So that brings him up to 3 attack dice. Sure, there are lots of ships in the Imperial faction that can roll 3 attack dice. The difference here is that you're only paying 30 points for a 3 attack dice ship.
And with that 3 attack dice, he's also an initiative 4, which puts him a little bit higher up as far as the TIE Fighters go. Plus, he's got a really reliable 3 defense dice as well, which just rounds him out pretty well for the value.
Right, and if you're looking at other ships that maybe have, you know, equivalent defense, maybe fewer defense dice or more hull, if you want 3 attack dice, the cheapest you can pay for a ship that has that normally is 34 points plus if you're looking at, like, low-end TIE Strikers. So you can save a few points here, and if you're in the right situation, Gideon will hit, like, those ships without having to pay those extra points. I think, though, when we're talking about ships that act like more expensive ships, we can look at kind of an inverse comparison to a ship I don't think is such a great value. So one ship that I was actually really excited for was Wolf in the ARC 170. Wolf's an Initiative 4 pilot. Really cool ability on Wolf. When you're attacking out your forward arc, you can spend your 1 charge, doesn't record normally, to reroll 1 attack dice. And then when you're attacking out your rear firing arc, you can regain a charge to roll an extra attack dice. So this is a really cool ship. Now, the problem I have with Wolf, amongst other problems, is that I think the value you get for the 51 points you have to pay right now doesn't really make him that much better than running either just a cheaper ARC 170 generic or even an ARC 170 generic with 7th Fleet Gunner, which also comes in at 51 points.
Right, because that 7th Fleet Gunner upgrade is a little bit more reliable than Wolf's ability, because all you have to do is take a weapons disabled to regain that charge, whereas Wolf actually has to shoot out the back at somebody. And at Initiative 4, he could get outpositioned by aces, and he's just not going to get that charge back.
Yeah, and even if you're not running, you know, 7th Fleet Gunner on there to get that cool extra attack die ability for another ship, I think if you just compare a 51-point Wolf to a 42-point ARC 170 generic, you're going to really not see that much difference in the value. They take damage at about the same rate since they're the same ship chassis. I would rather honestly save the 9 points I'd have to invest to go up to Wolf just to put those somewhere else in my list where I'll get more use out of them. Because at the end of the day, you know, my Arc 170 generic is going to be shooting with 3 attack dice and a focus token maybe. Might not get the Wolf reroll, but that one's hard to recharge. I'd rather just get the, you know, recursion and spend those points somewhere that will be more helpful.
But to be fair, in the right environment, Wolf could be good. Like, if the meta shifts more to a lower ship count, say, like, 3 or 4 average, Wolf's not terrible in that format.
Right. So, I mean, like, there could be situations that these change, right? That's another area where, comparatively, I guess right now I would prefer the generic. But if we enter an environment where there's fewer ships, I'm not going to get shot at as many times, I'd like the higher initiative and the extra modification.
And you just mentioned value from recursion, and I think that's a really big thing to take into effect when you're choosing the ships for your list as well.
Right, so sometimes you'll see value on certain pilots just because maybe they don't even have that dramatic of a pilot ability, but the fact that they can use it so frequently gives you little edges over time that there'll be a draw to choose that pilot over equivalent pilots in the same category or in the same ship chassis.
And a really good example of value from recursion would be Duchess in the TIE Striker. Her ability doesn't really directly affect her damage output or her defense in any way, but over time, it grants her a lot of small advantages.
Yeah, so Duchess, of course, comes in a TIE Striker. TIE Strikers have the adaptive ailerons, so whenever they activate, if they're not stressed, they perform a 1-straight or a 1-bank before their normal maneuver. If they're stressed, they then don't perform that 1-straight or 1-bank beforehand. Well, Duchess's ability is pretty simple. You can choose to ignore adaptive ailerons when you're not stressed, or while you are stressed, you can still perform the ailerons. And, you know, that movement advantage is kind of small. It's not directly affecting your attack or defense. But the fact that you have that kind of nuanced control and this ability is going to be available to you all the time, regardless of whether your ship's stressed or not, gives you actually a lot of value. Whereas I would probably choose Duchess with that, you know, pseudo extra reposition at Initiative 5 than any of the other TIE Strikers.
And it makes her less predictable as well, especially to lower initiative ships that may be trying to go for a block or set up a kill box. Well, Duchess has that advantage to see exactly where everyone's going to go, and then, oh, well, I'll just bank over here and get out of your arc, and I'm going to be fine.
Yeah, I think, like, having that pilot ability where, you know, she kind of does get the extra reposition from either not performing the ailerons or performing the ailerons when you wouldn't normally expect it, really kind of doubles down on her initiative bonus, where her being at 5 is just a little bit above the other strikers at 4, but that's compounded by the fact that she has something that also affects her positioning and allows her to be more reactive, so that you see like a huge value jump from the next lowest TIE Striker up to Duchess, even if there's not a huge point swing between those two.
And there's no limit to her ability either. It doesn't really rely on some extra condition or there's no charge tied to it. She can do it whenever she wants, both stressed or not stressed. Pretty much any given situation. So having that unlimited access to her ability is really good.
Well, yeah, and I think you see some really cool sounding pilot abilities and ships that might be a good value get ruined by like limitations to how often you can use their ability. So I think a good example of this would be Joy Rekoff in the Fang Fighter. Joy's got a really cool ability where you can spend a charge from an equipped torpedo upgrade to force a defender to roll 1 fewer defense dice when they're attacking, which, I mean, we've seen on Wedge Antilles, forcing an opponent to roll 1 fewer defense die is some of the best attack modification you can get.
And while that sounds cool, here's the problem, is that Joy comes in base at 52 points, which is just a little more expensive than the Initiative 4 Skull Squadron.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And the cheapest torpedo you could put on her with multiple charges would be the ion torpedo. So best case is you've got a 58-point Joy Rekoff who, if she's lucky, is going to get to use her ability twice.
Right, and that assumes she gets it off. That ship, you know, has okay agility, but just 4 hull, so it could fall apart pretty quickly. And, you know, putting the ion torpedo on there makes you now more expensive than, you know, the next higher initiative option for the Fang, like Old Turok. And I just don't think there's good value here. Now, what's interesting about this one is it won't take much to make this ship a substantially better value.
Right. If you just brought her down a couple points, then I think it would be worth considering putting into a list.
Or even if we saw a torpedo option that had a lot of charges and was relatively inexpensive, suddenly this ability becomes a lot more reliable.
But if I have 58 points to play with, then I'm going to take Old Tarok because using his ability requires a lot less than having Joy in your list.
All right, so we've looked at the way value can come in by ships functioning in most cases like a more expensive ship like Lulo or Gideon. We've looked at value through recursion of an ability through Duchess. Let's talk a little bit about value of a ship coming from its ability to combine well with other cards.
Yeah, so the first example we came up with is everyone's favorite U-Wing, Cassian Andor.
So Cassian's an Initiative 3 U-Wing who has a pilot ability that lets him, at the start of activation, remove a stress token from a friendly ship nearby. This is a really good ability in certain cases. Sometimes removing one stress token on its own wouldn't be the best ability for how much you have to invest in Cassian. But there's a combination of effects here and cards that you can pair up with Cassian that makes him actually a really good value, and I would say the best U-Wing value.
Right. One of the primary reasons being he's a cheap Leia carrier. Leia's been one of the consistently best upgrade cards for the Rebel faction right now, and having access to a cheap platform to be on just kind of increases her value as well.
Yeah, but I think that alone wouldn't be enough justification as to why Cassian's a great choice. I think Cassian pairs really well with the two really popular B-Wing options people are using, Braylon Strom and Ten Num. Both with stress-based abilities. So when Braylon has a stress, he can reroll up to two attack dice or up to two defense dice while he's stressed. And then Ten Num can spend a stress token to change all focus results either to hits or evades. But sometimes you don't want them to end the turn stress, and that can become a problem because they might not be able to, you know, get a shot on the right ship. They might want to turn around. Well, that's where Cassian's pilot ability becomes so useful. At the start of activation, pulling that stress away from one of them so they can then choose their other options and re-stress themselves that turn, still getting shots. I think that, like, the combination of those three factors really makes Cassian the best U-Wing value. Works well with Leia. Leia works well with B-Wings. B-Wings work well with Cassian.
Right. I personally don't think that if I had space to take a U-Wing, I would add Cassian just for his ability. Like, it's this combination of other interactions that he has that makes him so good. I mean, and I'd love to be wrong. I'd love to hear someone make an argument for why Cassian should be in a list without B-Wings or Leia.
So we can see the value here that Cassian gets coming from cards, but at the same time, certain cards have no value because they depend too much on other cards.
Right, so an example of a value comparison to Cassian would be Cath Scarlet in the Fire Spray. Her ability reads that when you perform a primary attack, if there is at least one friendly, non-limited ship at range zero of the defender, you can roll one additional attack die.
Yeah, so this is a cool ability. Anything that lets you roll more attack dice is generally good. The problem here is the setup's a little too complicated. First of all, it depends on your list having a non-limited ship. It depends on that non-limited ship being close to your target. And that's just a little too demanding for, you know, the investment you have to put into Cath Scarlet. At that point, you probably want to start looking at other, you know, more valuable, maybe slightly more expensive fire sprays. Rolling extra attack dice is cool. This one's just got too many prerequisites before you can use its ability effectively.
Right. And at Initiative 4, that friendly non-limited ship, I think to get the best effectiveness out of it would need to be a lower initiative. And there aren't great low initiative non-limited options for scum other than, you know, a mining guild tie or a Z95.
Yeah, at that point, you're basically just building your whole list around an ability that may or may not work. So one of the last sources of value that we're going to look at today is ship value coming from extra actions. And in a lot of ways, this is the most straightforward one because there are a lot of ship abilities that give you extra actions, either generally like Darth Vader letting you perform an action, spend a force, and link to another action, or ones that give you really specific actions. Sometimes value can come even if it's a specific action. It just makes up for all the other deficiencies a ship might have.
And with access to extra actions being so rare in second edition, it goes a really long way in regards to value in your list building to have those opportunities available to you.
So one of the ships he actually wanted to look at was Lieutenant Bastion in the T-70 X-Wing, who after a ship at range 1 to 2 is dealt a damage card, you may acquire a lock on that ship. So this ability is cool because it gives you action efficiency without actually having to take an action. So you can do this even while you're stressed. You're just acquiring a lock. Sure, the setup might be a little hard. You have to actually be dealing a damage card under the target you want to lock. But Bastion comes in at a low initiative, so presumably other ships in your list are going to fire either at the same initiative or before he does. So there's a good chance that you're already putting damage out by the time Bastion's going to need to use that target lock.
And it requires a very limited amount of setup as well to get that ability to trigger.
And one of the reasons we brought this up as a good value is, like, right now, Bastion only costs 48 points base and is an initiative 2 T70, whereas the lowest level T70, the 46-point Blue Squadron Rookie, is only initiative 1. So you're only dropping 2 extra points for an ability that could actually dramatically increase your damage output.
Right, and then if you're not getting his ability, or even if you are getting the ability, then he can still operate as a blocker if he's not going to get to shoot.
On the other hand, though, there are certain ships that have really appealing-sounding extra action abilities that, at the end of the day, are just, I think, pretty clearly not a really good way to spend your points.
Yeah, so now we're talking about the Initiative 2 Torrent, Tucker.
So, Tucker has an ability that, on face value, before you look at the points, seems like it actually could be pretty good. Tucker has, after a friendly ship at range 1 to 2 performs an attack against an enemy ship in your forward firing arc, you may perform a focus action. And extra focus actions are always good. It's decent offensive modification. And this is a pretty easy to perform feat of just having a friendly ship at range 1 to 2 perform an attack against a ship in your arc. Like, that's a very feasible setup to have.
Right, and as a missile carrier, it's great because you roll in, and you, if you get the chance to take a target lock, you do that. And then after your friendly ship shoots, then you're double modded for that missile attack.
Where Tucker actually really falls short is just the point value compared to other V-19s. So Tucker comes in at 31 points and is just Initiative 2, whereas the Initiative 2 generic Gold Squadron Trooper is only 25 points, which is a 6-point difference here is pretty huge, especially since you're not getting, you know, any extra slots, any extra initiative, just that extra ability.
Right, and even comparing that to the Blue Squadron Protector, which is the Initiative 3 generic, which has access to a pilot talent slot, that one's only 29 points, so it's still 2 points cheaper than Tucker is.
And this is really a case where if we just saw, you know, a slight point decrease here, you'd actually see Tucker as a pretty good value. I think right now a Gold Squadron Trooper is actually an okay value. You get 5 hit points, 2 attack dice, 2 agility. If Tucker fell more in the range of 28, maybe 27 points, where it's just a little bit more, kind of like Lieutenant Bastion is compared to the lowest T70, suddenly this, I think, would be a lot more appealing option. I think we'd actually start to see it in some lists.
And the other thing that kind of, I think, affects the value of Tucker as well is comparing him to Bastion's ability. He gets the target lock. It's not an action. Tucker's ability is actually a focus action. So if you did a barrel roll into a linked evade, you wouldn't be able to get that focus token.
Yeah, so we'd have to see a point adjustment that actually compensates for that if we were to see Tucker become more usable.
I'd consider putting Tucker in a list if he was 27 points.
So hopefully we've given you a pretty good idea of some of the ways you can perceive value and understand, you know, after the point changes comes, that's a big shakeup time for the metagame, and people are going to start testing out different things, especially ships that see substantial point decreases. So it's good to keep in mind these different factors about, you know, how to identify a ship as being a good value. Look at that ability. Does getting extra actions make it a good value for the points you're playing?
Or think about the value of recursion. How many times over the course of a game is a ship going to get to use its ability?
And then you can also look at things like, does it work well with other cards and other ships? You know, is its value increased by being paired up in certain combinations?
And then there's just face value of the ship itself as well. Does it function like a more expensive ship? Does it function like a cheap ship? Just things like that to consider as you're putting these things into your lists.
And let us know, what are some of the ways that you try to determine if a ship is a good value or not? Are there certain ships you think we glossed over or that we got wrong here? Let us know on Facebook at facebook.com/radioTCX. You can find the post for this episode. John, thank you for coming on the show again.
Yep, no problem, Tim.
Thank you guys so much for listening to this episode of Radio TCX. If you like the show, please go on to facebook.com/radioTCX and like our Facebook page. You can also find us on Twitter at Radio TCX Podcast. If you really enjoy the show, please go on to iTunes and leave us a 5-star review along with a comment saying what you like about the podcast and what others would be interested in listening. And if you really like the show, please consider going on to Patreon.com and becoming a direct supporter of the show. We really appreciate all the support we've received from Patreon, and it's really what makes us able to make this show every week. Thank you guys so much for listening. We will talk to you next week.